I am Bill Hing, and I am a professor of law and Asian American studies at the University of California at Davis.
Great, thank you. Okay, so we are going to talk about Cambodian deportation. So first of all, I'd like to talk about, cover some history about Cambodian refugees.
Sure.
Could you tell me why they came to America as refugees?
The Cambodians came to the United States as refugees following the 1975 withdrawal of the United States from the Southeast Asian War, the Vietnam War. And prior to 1975, the United States, under President Nixon, had secretively bombed many parts of Cambodia. And the United States also supported a right-wing insurgency in Cambodia. And soon after that, however, the communists led by Pol Pot came and overthrew the right-wing government that was supported by the United States. So the people were caught in the middle of the war, and part of what happened is a very sad story of the communist regime, the Khmer Rouge regime that was led by Pol Pot. That regime killed and massacred about 2 million Cambodians, and it's often referred to as the killing fields because much of it involved moving people from the cities to the farm areas. And there were also many people fleeing to Thailand and dying on the way. It's a very sad story. And as a result, those Cambodians that were able to reach Thailand and other refugee camps, the United States did feel some responsibility for those refugees, just as the United States felt responsibilities for Vietnamese and also people from Laos as well. So the Cambodians began coming to the United States in the late 1970s.
So how many Cambodian refugees are in the United States now? And then could you tell me briefly about their situation in America?
The number of Cambodians that were counted in the 2000 census is a little bit more than 200,000. However, the community thinks that the census is inaccurate. The community thinks that there's actually more like 250,000 to 300,000 Cambodians. The vast majority who have come to the United States are poor, and they also have, they're still in shock. Many of the parents are still in shock from the trauma that they suffered in the killing fields. So they have mental problems, and because they were poor and because they were, many are mentally unstable, they are on public assistance. They receive welfare, a large portion of them. Because they're poor, almost all of them are placed in cities and neighborhoods that are low income, and so they're refugees. They don't come to the United States and live in fancy neighborhoods. And so the vast majority of Cambodians live in poorer neighborhoods in the United States. The children attend schools in the inner cities and in other parts of the United States where they're not the best schools. And the parents generally are working at low wage, minimum wage jobs. Others continue to receive welfare.
I'm sorry, I should have mentioned you. I think sometimes you make noise and, you know.
All right.
Thanks. So it seems like, it seems like a lot of Cambodian deportees are young males. So is there any reason why they are all young males? Not all, but mostly.
Most of the Cambodian refugees that have been deported, and now there's about 126 that have been deported as of December, December 2004, about 126 have been deported. The vast majority are young males, and they fall in age between probably 20 and 35 years old. And the reason for this is because they came to the United States as young children, many of them. They came as infants or babies. Some of them were not even born in Cambodia. Some were born in the refugee camps in Thailand, for example. And when they came to the United States, they grew up in neighborhoods that were very tough, and many of them were picked on by other children. There are some stories in Orange County and Seattle and in Massachusetts where these young kids, they become victims of crime or bullying or even fights by other people. And so many of the young Cambodians, they decided to defend themselves, and some of them organized gangs with other Cambodians. And so the reason why so many of the young deportees have been young men is because they grew up in neighborhoods that led to situations that led to crime. And they are the first to admit that the reasons they have engaged in delinquency and juvenile problems and crime and gangs is because that was the culture that they learned in the communities that they lived in. It's not a culture that was brought from Cambodia. It was a culture that they lived in the United States. The environment where they were placed in the United States led to the criminal behavior that made them deportable.
I think to talk about Cambodian deportation, we have to talk about the Immigration Reform Act of 1996. Could you tell me what it is and then what the historical meaning is?
Right. Actually, beginning in the 1980s, the United States decided that the United States government decided that it was really going to clamp down on immigrants who have become criminals. So in the 1980s, they developed a term called aggravated felony, which is a serious crime. And in the 1980s, that crime, in order to be an aggravated felony, you had to be sentenced to 5 years in jail. But over time, between 1986 and 1996, the definition of aggravated felony was expanded. So in the 1996 law, there was a provision that if you were sentenced to jail for more than 1 year, then it could be classified as an aggravated felony. So 1996 made it easier to be classified as an aggravated felon. That's one thing that the 1996 law did. The other thing that the law did in 1996 was it removed from the immigration laws a form of defense, a form of relief from deportation that was a waiver. It was Section 212C of the Immigration Act that was eliminated in 1996. Before 1996, if you were convicted of an aggravated felony, you could still ask the immigration judge for a waiver. You could ask the judge to allow you to remain here. And the judge could grant that waiver if the judge was convinced that you were rehabilitated, that you had strong family ties here, that you were not going to get into trouble again, that you felt sorry for what you did, etc. So prior to 1996, many of the people that have been deported, if they had that relief available, the judge could have permitted them to stay here. The judge could have given them a second chance. But after 1996, that provision was removed. And after 1996, if you are an aggravated felon, you cannot apply for this waiver. You are automatically deported, no matter how long you have been a legal resident of the United States. If you're not a United States citizen and you've been convicted of an aggravated felony, you can be deported and you don't have a right to introduce evidence that you are rehabilitated.
So is it kind of a new tendency on anti-immigrant waves, or is this continuing from the, you know, history starting from like 1880s century?
Well, you know, I think that the enforcement of the deportation laws against criminals, that's always been a part of the immigration laws. However, since the 1980s, it's become more serious, and it coincides with the general environment in the United States of making our laws much more strict on any kind of criminals, so that criminals go to jail now with longer sentences, and criminals don't get a chance to get out of jail as soon as they used to in the past. You know, parole is harder to get, that kind of thing. So deporting immigrants is part of that enforcement of laws against criminals that began in the late 70s and 1980s. And so, but it has definitely gotten worse after 1996, and then after September 11, 2001, when the terrorist attacks took place in New York and Washington, and a decision was made by the Bush administration that we should get rid of as many aliens who are criminals as possible, because it was felt that one of the reasons that the terrorists were able to do what they did in September 11th was because they could get into the country so easily. And so while, in my opinion, there's not a natural connection between what happened in September 11th and deporting Cambodian refugees, it is part of the same philosophy. It's the philosophy of anyone who is in the country, who is misbehaving, if they're not a citizen, then they're not welcome in the United States. And so it's part of the same vision of keeping dangerous aliens out of the United States.
I think Cambodian deportation became possible because the Cambodian government decided to accept refugees back to their country. And I think it's kind of a very unusual situation. Could you explain what's going on?
It is very unusual for the United States to deport refugees from countries that are dominated by a communist government. Every day we deport people from the United States to Mexico, Canada, the Philippines, people that are immigrants. Every day we deport them. But before the deportation of Cambodians, the United States was not deporting people to communist-dominated countries, for example, like Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia and also Cuba. And so it is very unusual that we're deporting people to Cambodia. And the reason this came about was because after September 11, 2001, when the United States decided to clamp down on criminals in the United States decided that they were going to approach the different countries of Southeast Asia, Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, because there are many Southeast Asians. It's unfortunate, but there are many Southeast Asians in the United States who have committed crimes. And so the United States felt we should deport these people. And in order to do that, the country has to agree to accept their nationals. And so the United States did not have a repatriation agreement with Cambodia, Vietnam, or Laos. And so it approached those all three countries, actually. And Cambodia was the first one that showed a sign of weakness, that they might be open to accepting some of its nationals who had committed crimes. And so what Cambodia agreed, well, the United States threatened Cambodia that if it did not accept its nationals back who committed crimes, that the United States would no longer issue immigrant visas to Cambodians who want to immigrate to the United States. So Cambodia gave in, and also Cambodia felt that if it wanted to be accepted in international arena, that the United States convinced Cambodia that it needed to begin behaving in this manner. And so Cambodia signed the agreement in March 2002 to begin accepting a few refugees back each month who had committed serious crimes. But the United States continues to talk to Vietnam and Laos as well. If Vietnam and Laos sign those agreements, there will be many, many more deportations. It's believed that in the United States there are approximately 1,400 to 1,500 Cambodians that have committed serious crimes that are deportable. Well, it's estimated that Laotians, which include, or people from Laos, which include Hmong community members, it's estimated that there could be as many as 5,000 or more people that came from Laos as refugees. And for Vietnam, it's estimated that it could be way over 10,000. So right now, the United States is attempting to negotiate with those countries to also get those countries to sign repatriation agreements. And that's something that, that raises serious issues about the United States deporting people that grew up in the United States that did not learn their criminal habits or did not develop their criminal activity outside of the United States. They grew up here. They learned, as bad as it is, they learned their behavior here in the United States. So it really is a United States problem.
So I think I'd like to talk about Kim Ho Ma's case, because I think it's kind of important, and it has historical meanings.
Sure.
So could you talk about his case and then, you know, his achievement, but he ended up being deported. So could you explain about the process?
Sure. Kim Ho Ma grew up in a part of Seattle that was low income. And his story includes a typical kind of story where he was picked on, and in order to defend himself and fight back, you know, he joined forces with other Cambodians and other Southeast Asians, and so they fought back. And eventually he was convicted of a crime involving a shooting. Nobody was hurt, but he did fire a gun in a shopping mall, I believe, and he was convicted of a weapons crime, which is very serious to be convicted of a crime involving a gun. And
I thought he killed somebody.
Is that right?
That's what I thought.
I'm not sure.
That's why you wrote. He was in charge of manslaughter.
Right? Oh, that's right. I did write that. Yeah, okay. I'm confusing him with the other guy.
Okay.
Yeah. There's so many of them.
Yeah.
Okay, so well, let me repeat that. So Kim Ho Ma grew up in a poor part of Seattle, and he joined a gang, and eventually he was involved in a shooting and was convicted of manslaughter. And this happened when he was a juvenile. However, he was treated like an adult, and that happens more and more today where there's weapons involved, where gang members are involved. They get treated like adults, and so therefore the punishment is more severe. And when you have the severe punishment, then it can be an aggravated felony. He went to jail, and he served his time satisfactorily. But instead of being released from the criminal justice system, he was turned over to the Immigration Service because he was an alien. He's not a citizen. And this happens to all non-citizens who are convicted of crimes. When they're released from the state or federal criminal justice system, they are turned over to the immigration authorities. And at that time, this was in the late 1990s, at that time, he was well-behaved. There was no problems in jail. However, the Immigration Service felt that because his crime was serious, that he was still a danger to the community. Well, there was a lot of evidence that he was not a danger to the community. So his attorneys, Jay Stanzel, and other attorneys who represented similar clients, they went into federal court arguing that the Immigration Service was not going to deport them. The United States Immigration Service could not deport them because at that time, the United States was not deporting people to countries like Cambodia. And eventually the federal courts agreed that as long as he is not a danger to the community, and as long as the Immigration Service is not going to deport him, then he should have a right to be released from custody. And the government appealed this ruling, the preliminary federal court ruling, all the way to the Supreme Court. The case went to the United States Supreme Court. And in the summer of 2001, the Kim Ho Ma case and another individual named Zad Vitus, their cases were combined. The Supreme Court ruled in a very close 5-4 opinion that they should be released if the government was not going to deport them. And so, in fact, Kim Ho Ma was released, and he was very happy about being released. The problem is that several months later, his case at the Supreme Court was in 2001, summer 2001, but several months later in March 2002, that's when the United States reached this agreement with Cambodia, the repatriation agreement. And there is very good reason to believe that the United States government was targeting Kim Ho Ma because he embarrassed the government. His case went all the way to the Supreme Court and won. And so there were some Cambodians that were deported in the summer of 2002. But in the October group, it was the third group of Cambodians that were deported, actually. That's when Kim Ho Ma was part of that group and got deported in October of 2002. He was part of the third group. I once thought he was part of the first group, but there was, I found out from the people in Cambodia, this Bill Harrod, that he kept track of all those that came. And there was some that came in June.
I must have got the information.
You got the information from me. Yeah, right. Yeah, so, but Kim Ho Ma was one of the first that was targeted. And the only delay was that the United States had to get a passport for Kim Ho Ma, and he didn't have a passport. And so the United States had to help him get a passport from the Cambodian government. That's why it was delayed. Otherwise, he would have been in the first group.
Okay, what about now, so people who serve their time, they don't need to be detained by the INS, right, immigration authorities, but they are released, but they have to wait until they are deported? What's the process?
Currently, when a non-citizen person is released from the criminal justice system, they still are turned over to the Immigration Service first, or what now is called the Bureau of Immigration and Custom Enforcement, ICE, right? And at that point, the immigration authorities, they do make a determination, is this person likely to be deported or not? And is this person still a danger to the community? And so some of the individuals remain in the custody of the immigration authorities, but many of them are being released. Many are being released because of the Kim Ho Ma decision in the summer of 2001. Once released, however, and I'm talking about the Cambodians now, they are very nervous. Their life is completely up in the air because they're not sure what's going to happen to them. And so many of them are just waiting to hear. They don't know when they're going to be deported. They know that they're on the list if they have been convicted of an aggravated felony. And the immigration authorities have forced all of them to try to get passports, and the Cambodian government is slowly processing many of those. But you see, the Cambodian government, in their agreement, they only agreed to take 6 to 10 each month. And there has not been a group that has been sent every month. It's been very sporadic. And so right now, the families and the individuals that are waiting to be deported, they're very nervous. They are uneasy. They don't know if they can work. They don't know what they can do. And many of them don't speak the language. And of course, culturally, they're very, very different, having grown up in the United States, than what will be happening to them in Cambodia. But yes, there's no guarantee of when people are going to be deported. They're just totally confused, and they just are wondering what's going to happen to them.
Do you think the law might be changed in the future? There is any possibility?
There are many people that are trying to work on trying to change the law. And I think that there is a small possibility, but two things. There are some discussions. Should there be a special law for refugees because they came here in such serious circumstances and because many of them grew up in the United States? But as I said earlier, every day there are immigrants from other countries that are being deported as well. And the law changed in 1996 that those individuals also cannot apply for a waiver. So there are groups of people that for the last 6 or 7 years have been working on trying to change the 1996 law back so that people from all countries who are lawful immigrants, who have been convicted of crimes, that if they're going to be deported, that they at least ask the judge if they can have a second chance. Not automatically get a second chance, but give the judge some possible authority if the judge believes the person. Well, I believe that at some point in the future that that law will go back to the pre-1996 provision, but I don't think it's going to happen in 1 or 2 years. I think that Congress needs to hear more stories, more sympathetic stories about how this is affecting families and how this is resulting in the deportation of people that really have changed, people that have very good records, that know that they made a mistake, but they've grown up now and they've changed their ways. I think that once Congress begins to realize that there are some very good people that are being deported, that we can change their minds and perhaps the law will change.
And also I think the Cambodian communities, Asian communities, and other communities have mm-hmm. been fighting against the Cambodian deportation. Could you tell me their achievement and actions?
Well, there are many people that are working on this issue. It has been frustrating, but there are people from not just the Cambodian community, but of course Vietnamese and Hmong refugee communities are working on this. But also there's interest in people, for example, who are supporting the Somali community, because the United States has been deporting refugees from Somalia as well. And it's not exactly the same, but it's similar, because Somalia doesn't have a government right now, and yet the United States is deporting refugees to Somalia, and many of those who have been deported have been killed on arriving in Somalia because there's no functioning government there. And so you're right, there are many individuals and organizations that are working on this, and so far the only real accomplishments are that there's more information known, that there's more education, that there's more members of Congress that know about this problem. And it's hard to predict when something really tangible is going to be resulting from these changes. But but we're hopeful.
I think you talk about alternative method. You are against deportation, but it seems like there might be some people who are worrying about if it's not, what's the solution? But I think you suggested some other method. Could you share those alternatives with us?
Yeah, see, I think that the problem with just deporting people without giving them a second chance is that it's deporting people who have committed crimes because of our own system, because of our own society. And I believe that that's not fair. I don't think that it's fair that we deport people because of a problem that we contributed to and that we created. And so, in my view, what we ought to be doing is working with those individuals and their families and communities and giving them a chance to show that they really can be contributing members of society. So it comes in many different names. You can call it restorative justice, or you can call it relational justice. But what I think that the immigration authorities should do is put these individuals on some type of probation, perhaps, where they have to go back to their community, they have to do community service, or they have to get work, and they have to report regularly to the immigration service. And the communities then should also take responsibility for these individuals. The community should be developing programs to help make them stronger, to help them understand what the problems are. And I think that's important because the way it is right now, we're losing, the Cambodian community is losing many young men. And as a result, it's creating other problems. Many of them have spouses and children here, and they're not going to have their father or their husband here. And so that creates other problems. And so, in my opinion, we ought to completely relook at the whole deportation process, that it should be more like a system where people are given a second chance. And then if they make a mistake, then fine. You know, maybe then you deport them. But you give them a chance first because there's so much to gain. If you can help reconstruct their lives, then their families are better off, their children are better off. Of course, they're better off, and the community's better off. And so I really think that's something that I hope that the policymakers would look very closely at, is just totally rethinking the whole deportation process and making it more of a system where we try to make the community stronger.
Okay, I think I asked all the questions. Let me just double check.
Sure, okay.
I tried to ask whether
you asked a lot of good ones.
Thanks.
You read my paper, I'm impressed.
Oh, yes. Of course.
Right.
And last question I'd like to ask is whether you tried to add something for the documentary.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so
good, yeah.
Do you have anything in
I guess the only thing, no, I was just, let me just repeat, you know, that the people that we're talking about who are being deported are products of the American environment, and their families and what happened to them are all a result of United States refugee policies and resettlement policies. And they are individuals who now realize that they did wrong. They're individuals who have families here. They're individuals that have spouses and children and, of course, parents here. And all they're asking for is a second chance. And I think that the United States owes that to them because the United States played such a role in developing the refugee problem in Cambodia. And also, just as human beings, because of what their parents went through, we should give them a second chance.
Absolutely. I want to ask one more question, mm-hmm. if you allow me. We are producing 8-hour documentary.
Right, yeah, I know the outline, yeah.
And then this piece will go to the as piece of the whole documentary.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Yes. So mm-hmm. it's like closing the yeah. whole documentary of Asian American history.
Right.
Would you like to say something about Cambodian deportation in the context of the whole history?
That's a good question. Yeah. You know, given the history, well, let me start this way. To me, Asian American history is about immigration policy and refugee policy, because from the very beginning, there was open borders and anyone could come to the United States, but it was the Asians, you know, first the Chinese, then the Japanese, and then others, where the restriction laws began. And so immigration and refugee policies it very much explains who we are and why we are this. And the vast majority of Asian Americans today continue to be foreign born in the United States. And so the fact that we are now deporting a part of the Asian American community for reasons that relate to the development of the community here and the failed resettlement policies of the United States government very much is similar to what happened historically, where the United States government went out of its way to pick on certain groups to exclude them. Now the United States is going out of its way to pick on a certain refugee group to deport them. And there's very much a repetition of history that's sad, because when there's a time of crisis in the 1800s, when we're worried about the economy, we're worried about economic competition, we're worried about social issues, we picked on Asians to exclude them. And now we're worried about criminals, we're worried about terrorists, that type of thing, we pick on another group of Asians to deport them. And it just goes to show you that history can repeat itself, that Asian Americans are often the scapegoats and the targets because we're so easy to pick out, and it's so easy to distinguish us from sort of the white middle class American.